Let NAMIC plan your next event. Building on more than a century of experience, the association is pleased to offer event planning services to insurance companies, brokers, agency networks, financial institutions, and associations. NAMIC's team of skilled professionals has experience in all aspects of event planning, along with a unique understanding of the industry. We know what it takes to produce engaging and dynamic events that achieve successful bottom line results. Let NAMIC help you redirect your time, energy, and resources back to your business objectives by leaving the planning to us. Learn more at NAMICEventPlanning.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to an all-new episode of Insurance Uncovered. The podcast is produced by the National Association of Mutual Insurance Companies and is your source for insurance news and perspective from thought leaders in the property casualty insurance industry. I'm your host, Justin Hakes. Today, we're uncovering IIHS raises standards for its top safety pick awards, how the organization is challenging auto manufacturers to meet tougher requirements. Plus, it's early in the recovery process and already the numbers are large. How the insurance industry readies for losses from the Baltimore Bridge collapse tragedy. The collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Maryland is a multi-layered tragedy. For the families and friends of those killed or presumed dead, it's a profound personal loss. For businesses that rely on the Port of Baltimore, it's an economic nightmare, and for the federal courts, it will soon become a balance of dollars and facts, with a network of insurance companies expected to foot at least some of the bill. Insured losses could be as much as $2 to $4 billion, according to Morningstar. S&P Global Ratings estimates $3 billion, which would still make this tragedy the largest marine insurance loss ever recorded. And Barclays analysts believe damage claims for the bridge alone could reach $1.2 billion, while claims for wrongful deaths and business interruptions could run up to $700 million. President Joe Biden vowed that the federal government would move to rush funds to pay for the cost of reconstructing the bridge, although the administration also said that the government expects insurance would ultimately pick up some of the tab. The White House did release $60 million in emergency funds to help jumpstart the recovery. Congress must approve additional funding. A federal judge in Illinois ruled in favor of the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development in a case seeking to dismiss the agency's disparate impact rule as arbitrary and capricious. The court ruling upheld HUD's application of disparate impact liability to insurers, acknowledging that state and federal laws often collide over the issue of insurance risk assessment and that all states permit insurers to use risk-based pricing and underwriting methods. The court found that the D.C. District Court's recent opinion in NAMIC's challenge to be persuasive on numerous points, which indicates how important NAMIC's present appeal at the Court of Appeals will be going forward. The Insurance Institute for Highway Safety is making it harder to earn its top safety pick awards this year. On today's Unscripted, NAMIC CEO Neil Aldridge talks with IIHS President David Harkey about the challenge for auto manufacturers to offer better protection for backseat passengers and for pedestrians.
Joining me today on the podcast is a repeat guest, actually, the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. We have President David Harkey with us today. David has been with the IIHS and is known to many in the insurance industry, of course, and the great work that the Institute does as it relates to highway safety. But there is some new news in that there's been some changes to the top safety pick award that the IIHS gives out to cars as part of their review process. And so we thought it'd be worthwhile to have David on the podcast again and kind of talk through the changes and what people can expect to see. So David, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Neil. Great to be back.
I think you're getting into the top five repeat guest category, I think, for the podcast. But everybody is always interested in these topics. So why don't we go ahead and just jump right in here and talk. There have been some changes. The IIHS has changed some of the criteria for what merits the top safety pick award. So why don't you talk us through what the changes are?
Yeah, so you know, one of the things that we do is we're constantly looking at real world crash data and trying to figure out what are the ongoing problems that perhaps we haven't resolved yet when it comes to vehicle safety, and where are there opportunities to improve safety of the vehicle. And this year, one of the big changes that we made was what we call our moderate overlap test. So this is one of our frontal crash tests where 40% of the vehicle on the driver's side actually strikes the barrier. And this was actually our original test at the IHS going all the way back to 1993. But we've always just included a driver. So a male driver in that vehicle. And so what's changed is this year, we now have a small female crash dummy in the vehicle as a rear seated passenger. And one of the reasons we did this is some research that we did a few years ago showing that the risk of being injured as a belted occupant in the vehicle has shifted from more likely that you're going to be injured if you're in the front seat to now the rear seat. And it's not because the rear seat has gotten less safe. It's just because we've put all the safety technology into the front seat. So that's what our big change was this year is having to get a good or acceptable rating in that new moderate overlap test with the focus on how well do you protect that rear seated passenger.
That's interesting. You mentioned that the rear seat here over the last few years has become, you know, relatively speaking, I guess, the more dangerous spot, right? So I'm not sure that is something that would be top of mind to many people, but it stands to reason for the very reasons you talk about. We have an awful lot of safety features for the driver, but it kind of stops there. That's very interesting. So let's talk a little bit about how did the cars do with this new criteria. Like you guys tested something like a couple of hundred, I think, through the test. Changes, surprises, all those kinds of things?
We typically carry ratings now for just over 200 plus vehicles, and so in our initial release, what we just released now, granted, we have not gotten through all 200 of those vehicles for the 2024 model year, but for the ones that we've tested to date, we're actually seeing decent results in terms of how they're performing. We had 71 winners, and 22 of those were top safety pick plus winners. And those 22 vehicles actually performed well in this new moderate overlap test. So that gives you a sense of 22 of those vehicles we think are doing a really good job of protecting that rear seated passenger relative to the 200 plus vehicles that we keep ratings on.
Right. I have not looked at the ratings, but I was curious, is that those 22 also the same 22 that likely performed well before you implemented the new criteria as well?
Yeah. So that's the most interesting part is when you look at our original moderate overlap test, every single vehicle now in our fleet, and part of the reason we decided to enhance this test is almost every single vehicle we test nowadays gets a good rating in our original moderate overlap test. And so there's no real differentiation between the vehicles when you just look at that original test. But we're going to see differentiation now with this updated test.
And is it, refresh my memory, I think you mentioned this, in the testing, the occupants do have on seat belts, right?
They do. They are belted occupants. And so that's one of the things that, you know, is really important and always one of the things that we push for, making sure people understand that, you know, despite all the testing that we do, the seat belt, And all the improvements that the automakers continue to make, the seatbelt continues to be the most important safety device you have in a vehicle.
Yeah.
And yet, when you look at passenger car fatalities in the United States, almost half of those fatalities involve unbelted occupants. And so it's a frustrating piece that we have to continue to work on of how do we change behavior? We can change vehicles, automakers can change vehicles, but we have to continue to also focus on how we change behavior.
And I think, I mean, my perception is we've largely accomplished that as it relates to the driver. It seems to me, I mean, I'm you know, 53 years old and vividly remember growing up when nobody wore seatbelts and sort of lived through the transition of everybody having seatbelts, but then everybody really, in most cases, seems to be the driver, and it kind of does dwindle if you think about the rest of the passengers in the car. So we must still be seeing, especially in the back seat, right? We must be seeing higher levels of non-seatbelt use for passengers in the back seat or the rear seat.
Yeah, when you look at observed seatbelt use, it's about 90% for those in the front seat nationwide, you know, if you look at the average across the country, and about 75% for the rear seat. So definitely more unbelted occupants in that rear seat. But when we look at those fatality numbers, you know, there's still, you know, people in the front seat, including those drivers who are just not wearing them. And it's, you know, we know there's always a percentage of people that are the hard to reach folks that may never put that belt on, but we've got to keep working at that.
Yeah, no, completely agree. It's been a great story of auto safety, but still some simple steps, very simple changes in behavior could even improve those numbers, no doubt about it. Okay. So let's look at the backseat. What sort of, for the automakers and for consumers looking to shop around, look at the different safety features beyond the seatbelt usage in the backseat as it relates to the safety test, what features are important here? I assume airbags must be part of it.
Yeah, and that comes across in any of our crashworthiness ratings. You know, the airbags are certainly an important part of keeping that driver safe, keeping that driver contained during the crash so that they're not hitting any hard objects in the vehicle with their head. And so that's a really important piece. You know, the other things that are really important and you have to do well in to get our top safety pick or top safety pick plus award, you have to have good or acceptable headlights on all trim levels of a particular model. You have to have pedestrian front crash prevention that achieves one of our highest levels of success, both during the day and night. And that was something we added this year as well to the top safety pick criteria, is having that pedestrian front crash prevention technology on the vehicle to detect and respond to pedestrians at night, because three quarters of our pedestrian fatalities occur at nighttime. And so it's really important to address that particular problem as well.
Yeah, and I know that seems to be that pedestrian safety features. I know we've talked, I think the last time we had you on, I think maybe we spent more time talking about autonomous vehicles and some of the research you were doing. I know one of the big issues there has been the pedestrian detection and reaction in the context of autonomous vehicles in particular. But it's interesting that also applies to people with, you know, most of the cars, which are people with drivers in them.
Yep.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and you have to remember, this is another one of the sad things, unfortunately, on our roadway system these days. We are at a 40-year high when you look at pedestrian fatalities in our country. And so it is a really big problem that we need to figure out how to address.
Yeah, when I talk about auto issues around to different audiences, there's this perception, I think, amongst everybody that cars are safer and people, you know, 90% of people or at least in the front seat are wearing their seatbelts, and we have all of this new technology and we have some of the detection and avoidance technology and all of the really great additions to the cars themselves. But we also have this plague of distracted driving and driving fast and more frequent and severe accidents going on at the same time. But we have this perception and reality that cars have never been safer. And it's an interesting set of challenges we have as an industry right now related to auto safety. There's no doubt.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the reason that our focus here at the Institute is, and we started this shift several years ago, to starting to think about the problems that we have in a more systemic way, that we have to think about the whole system. It's not just the vehicle. It's also, you know, how do we change behaviors of individuals? How do we address impaired driving? How do we address speeding on our roadways? How do we address the vulnerable road users? And speed is a big problem that we have to address. Yeah. And then how do we do more with the infrastructure that we have? You know, there are things that we can do, like put in more roundabouts that we know can reduce fatalities by more than 80% compared to a signalized intersection. And so you have to think of all of these things. And then the emergency services. How do we get post-crash care to people more quickly? And so you have to think of all of these things in a system. And that's really the way we're trying to address a lot of our problems these days. And it's how a lot of other countries, frankly, have been able to reduce their fatality numbers. And we, unfortunately, have not been able to do so.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I live in an area that central Indiana and one of the suburbs here, many of the suburbs have roundabouts have become a very common thing. And it's interesting when you talk to people where it's new, the perception initially is that roundabouts are more dangerous because yep. people don't know how to approach them or how to drive through them. But the reality is very different than that.
Yeah. Everyone needs to visit Carmel, Indiana.
Yeah, that's the town next to where I live. And Carmel's influence on the rest of the infrastructure around the Indianapolis metro area has been large, and that roundabouts are appearing everywhere. It improves traffic flow, you know, terrifically, but it also really, I don't think people really do understand the improvement from a safety perspective. I think that sort of, it seems like traffic flow is the big thing people talk about, but it does help with that. But yeah. The safety aspects are certainly a big part of it, but it's just not a top of mind thing for many people, because at first, especially when they're new, or if they're new in an area where they haven't been before, you know, it's this hesitancy around what do I do with the dang roundabout?
That's right.
But once you catch on, they really do work. But at any rate, David, thanks for the work. Thanks for the new upgrade here. Anything we can do to encourage the auto manufacturers, and they have been very willing partners in this effort to make cars safer. And certainly the insurance industry has an interest here too, but we appreciate the partnership with the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety and all the work you guys do every day to help make cars and roadways safer. And we continue to work together with you. So I'm glad to have you on again and talk about these new criteria and some of the results. And people can go to the IHS website, right, and find out more information, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. You can go to IIHS.org and you can find all the ratings for any vehicle, whether you're looking for a new vehicle or a used vehicle. And you can find the latest top safety pick list that will have all the award winners on there. And you know, thank you to you and NAMIC. We appreciate the support that you guys offer. And we know we need partners in all of this. And I think that's one of the big messages that, you know, we continue to partner with you and everyone in the insurance industry. We continue to partner with the auto industry. We're not going to be doing this alone. We've got to have help.
Well, it's a great story, and we keep making it better, and hopefully we can continue to improve things. So we'll continue to work together with that in mind. So thanks again, David, for joining us, and I'm sure we'll catch up again soon.
Sounds good. Thank you.
And that's all for this week's episode of Insurance Uncovered. We'll be back on April 17th with more insurance news. Until next time, I'm Justin Hakes. Have a great day.